arrest, detention, trial by military tribunal of American citizens on United States soil? Can't happen here, right? Or has it happened already? Today on Principles and Policies. Hello, I'm your host, Chuck Michaelis, sitting in once again for the regular host, Barry Sheets. I'm normally the co-host here. I am the vice chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the executive director of Camp American. And you've heard me say that several times, and Camp American is an educational organization. And we run a summer camp in Indiana, and it's available to children and adults 12 and up. And you can find out more information about Camp American at www.campamerican.com. Don't go to campamerica.com. If you go to campamerica.com, you can buy camping supplies, which would probably help you out at Camp American, but our address is Camp American with the end, campamerican.com. The Institute for Principled Policies website address is www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. Again, we covet prayers for Barry Sheets. I've just talked to him. He was supposed to help me record a program tonight, and he is still feeling under the weather, having trouble with a terrible cough, an illness that is just keeping him from operating at 100%. He claims he's going to try to be back for tomorrow's show. We'll see. If not, I'll be back here by myself again. We covet your prayers for Barry, for his quick recovery, and for me, so that I might be informative and entertaining to you folks out there on the radio. Today's show, I'm trying to keep it interesting. And I've been doing a little research of late because we've been talking about the National Defense Appropriations Act, or as some are calling it, and I think this may be more correct, the National Defense Authorization Act. In any case, it's the NDAA, and we originally warned you about it as S-1867. It is now law of the land. And if you heard my opening, made allusions to the detention, imprisonment, trial of American citizens on U.S. soil by the United States military. And by trial, I mean people being tried by military tribunals rather than a prescribed jury of their peers in a court of law. And a lot of people doubt that that's actually happened in American history. And in fact, there is a very famous case that we're going to be talking about today. And that case is called Ex Parte Milligan, or Ex Parte Milligan. Depends on, again, I'm not a law school graduate. Those of you who out there who are lawyers, feel free to beat me about the face and head verbally, not physically. We don't want any violence over this. But we're going to talk about a case, Ex Parte or Ex Parte Milligan, and it involves a man from Indiana whose name was Lambden P. Milligan. And what Lambden P. Milligan was accused of during the war between the states was a number of things. He was arrested at the order of a general of a military commission appointed by the President of the United States to oversee quote-unquote military justice. And you might be thinking I'm talking about in the South after the occupation, but I'm not. This is before the victory. Lambden P. Milligan and several of his colleagues, people by the name of William Bowles, Harrison Dodd, Stephen Horsey, Andrew Humphreys, names that do not ring familiar these days because they didn't bring the action that Milligan brought to the United States Supreme Court. Now, basically what happened, Milligan was a Southern sympathizer. Of this, there can be no doubt. He publicly protested the war and made the Indiana governor his frequent target for criticism. That was Governor Morton of Indiana. There is some talk that Milligan was involved in a giant conspiracy, that he was a member of a group called the Knights of the Golden Circle, and we won't go into that, but that does seem to have some conspiratorial aspects to it. And he is accused, along with these other fellows, this William Bowles, Harrison Dodd, Stephen Horsey, Andrew Humphreys, of conspiring to raid northern prisoner of war camps to free the Confederate prisoners and get them back south. And all these fellows were arrested by order of a Union general, General Alvin P. Hovey, and they were tried before a military tribunal in late 1864. All of them were tried, were found guilty, and sentenced to death by this military tribunal. And Milligan was, while a gadfly and a Southern sympathizer, was also a very sick man. He suffered from a form of brain damage caused by meningitis or possibly epilepsy, and he had a rather nasty case of a disease, a skin disease, and was actually paralyzed in one leg. He was forced to walk to prison despite the fact that he was unable to use his leg. He was kept in a military prison cell that had open cracks during the winter, so he was constantly cold. His food was thrown to him on the floor, not given to him on a plate. Most people would treat an animal better than these men were treated as prisoners. And the fact is that they were abused and they were condemned prisoners. In the interim, before the death sentence can be carried out, the victory comes of the Union forces over the South. And Milligan brings a case demanding release using the habeas corpus provision of the United States Constitution. Now, what's interesting is that during the war, President Lincoln signed an executive order. Again, we've talked about executive orders and their legality, which basically suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Now, a careful perusal, and we're not going to do that right now, we will do it in a subsequent show. The president cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Only Congress can suspend the writ of habeas corpus, and only under very specific circumstances. So Milligan goes to the Supreme Court in what's called an ex parte case. And an ex parte case is basically only one of the parties to a lawsuit need be heard in an ex parte case. And because Milligan was suing the federal government itself for his release, a court agreed to hear this ex parte case with only Milligan's representation present. And what's interesting about this is one of Milligan's lawyers was a future president of the United States. James A. Garfield was one of his attorneys. And what Milligan argued was that the five men, including Milligan, had no business being tried by a military court in a place where the federal court system was still in operation and there was an actual federal justice system available to try these men for treason or some other crime that actually existed, not the extra legal musings of basically what amounts to an out of control military apparatus for applying quote unquote justice that has been appointed by the president and is responsible only to the president, is not responsible really to Congress or to the federal court system. This is antithetical to the American system of justice, rather obviously. And that's exactly what Milligan and his attorneys argued. What they also argued was that the suspension of habeas corpus did not include and could not include the right to turn the administration of justice over to the United States military. In other words, turn the arrest, the imprisonment, and the trial of quote-unquote political prisoners, and these men were political prisoners. There is a question about whether or not they were traitors, and of course they were never tried for treason. There are reasons why they weren't tried for treason, and it has to do with the fact that had they been tried for treason, the constitutional definition of treason implies that there is a foreign nation involved. And in fact, that would have been a tacit recognition of the fact that the South had actually seceded and was a separate country and had been invaded by the United States of America, something that President Lincoln and most of the remaining members of Congress were not willing to admit. And that would have basically made a great part of the case, although that can be argued. It's a very important part of the reason why these men were tried as military political prisoners. They didn't want to deal with these definitions as they exist in the United States Constitution. Basically, what was implied was that the law the Authorization Act to suspend the writ of habeas corpus, which is a legal move under certain circumstances. And I think we could question whether or not this was the case, but nonetheless, we're not going to do that. What Milligan's attorneys were arguing was that there was no provision in the Suspension Act to allow military courts to try individuals. There's nothing in there about trying soldiers. Obviously, the military has the right to try soldiers constitutionally under its purview in the Constitution. But the fact is that there's no American citizens cannot be tried by a military court. And that was part of the argument, that in fact, the mere passage of the Habeas Corpus Suspension Authorization Act did not authorize the executive branch to appoint military commissions who could then go out and order the arrest of United States citizens. And in fact, this was nothing new for Lincoln. He did this. There's another famous case called Ex Parte Merriman. It's a very famous case. We won't go into that today because we're short on time. But the fact is that this seems to have been a modus operandi of President Lincoln. He believed that he had the right to do this, despite the fact that nowhere in the United States Constitution is that power either given or implied. Well, the Supreme Court, very interestingly, having heard the Ex Parte Milligan case, voted very strongly in favor. In fact, the decision passed 9-0. When was the last time you heard in our era of anything passing the Supreme Court, especially having to do with individual rights, passing 9-0? The decision was read by Justice Davis, and he's speaking for the court. He held that the trials of civilians by presidentially created military commissions are unconstitutional. Martial law cannot exist where the civil courts are operating. In other words, because Milligan lived in Indiana and there was an existing judiciary and justice system that was operating, was not crippled, was not under occupation. And that's a good point, because President Lincoln was actually arguing or acting as if the entire United States of America was one big giant occupied military zone, and that martial law applied every place within the borders of the United States, and that included the South, which was both occupied and unoccupied at the time. The fact is that the United States military, under the orders of the President of the United States, who was Abraham Lincoln, acted as if it had the right to detain, arrest, imprison, and try United States citizens as if they were political prisoners. So what's the bottom line on all this? Well, the fact is that the point I'm trying to make today is that some people are arguing that this military detention trial, being actually detained without trial for months, years, perhaps for life, in a military facility far, far away from home, couldn't possibly happen here, and especially couldn't happen under the NDAA. And the fact is that I am arguing, from a historical perspective, that without a law that was even this onerous as the NDAA is, actually happened already, and that the reasons given were completely unconstitutional, as the NDAA itself is, or at least sections of it. And the fact is that we only got our full constitutional protections after the war was over. Well, as you all know, we're all in a quote-unquote war on terror, which is, as we've explained before, is impossible, since you can't declare war on a military tactic. And it's also open-ended, and there is no end in sight for any such thing as a war on terror. So it's important that we keep in mind that, indeed, it can happen here. We are rapidly running out of time, and I want to discuss this a little more, because Ex Parte Milligan and Ex Parte Merriman are extremely important cases, and I want to discuss the fact tomorrow that the Supreme Court of the modern day may not see things the way that the Supreme Court of 1866 that did the right thing and issued a writ of habeas corpus for Mr. Milligan and his compatriots. we may not see this the same kind of activity. So it's imperative that we do something about this National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA. And I would ask you to join me tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.